Hi. My name is Scott Oliver McTaggart, and I'm one of the pastors with Artisan Church. Grateful to be here with you all. How many of you ran a marathon before coming here? No takers? I was going to say, Gus, I thought you would be... No, not this one. Okay. Well, I'm just going to jump in right here. In 2011, 15 years ago, is when myself, my wife, Aubin, and our oldest daughter, who was 1 or 2 years old at the time, we moved into Vancouver. A mentor of mine suggested volunteering at 2 organizations in the downtown east side as a way of learning. And so he suggested one that was faith-based and one that was not faith-based. So I grew up in the suburbs, and this neighborhood felt terrifying to me. I felt overwhelmed, I felt uncomfortable, and even fearful. So my fearful suburban self sent 2 emails to Carnegie Community Center and Jacob's Well. Hello, my name is Scott. I would like to volunteer your organization. Will you accept me? They both accepted me. Thank you. Very different experiences, very different organizations. Carnegie is known as the living room of the downtown east side. Jacob's Well is a very different experience, more intimate. And it wasn't till I started meeting people in the neighborhood and seeing the place through faces and stories that I became more comfortable, more sense of belonging. And as we've suggested in this sermon series, space becomes place through embodiment. That places are relational, familiar, storied, and inhabited. Specifically through my Jacob's Well experience of the downtown east side, this neighborhood became a neighborhood of not just spaces, but places and people and stories. I got to meet people like Beth, Berto, John, Edwin, and this woman, Pauline Fella, the founder of Jacob's Well. She's basically like a modern day Dorothy Day. In 1976, at the age of 60, she began. Just that sentence alone. At the age of 60, she began. To begin anything later in life is just, I have so much admiration, but she began walking the streets of the downtown east side and felt compelled to befriend people in the neighborhood. For the next 25 years, she did this almost every day, faithfully walked the streets and alleys, visited bars, prisons, local hospitals, and hotels, where she had many friends. She was known to many as sister or mom, and was respected by many in the neighborhood. In 2001, how many of you met or knew Pauline Fell? Yeah, what a saint. Pauline and a few friends in 2001 opened the doors of a storefront on Main at 239, and they called it Jacob's Well. It became a place for all her friends, plus more, to gather. And I got to experience this firsthand as a community member. A little bit different, like I said, than the Carnegie, where I felt maybe like a cog in a machine. At Jacob's Well, I was a community member. And whenever I asked someone, are you a volunteer or do you just go here? Because those were the only categories I could try to make sense of, like who does what around here. I would always be corrected. We're friends, or you're a community member. There's no volunteer and attendee. We're all part of this community. And it was an acquired taste that I grew to love and need still to this day. My favorite memory of Jacob's Well is getting to take our Friday afternoon variety hour. And when I use the word variety, I mean variety. To take some of the musical talent and make a live recording. And so we made this awesome live recording that still exists today. Just Google Bandcamp Jacob's Well and enjoy. In 2015, at the age of 99, Pauline passed away, and her legacy lives on still in this neighborhood. And like most places in this neighborhood, the story of Jacob's Well is a common one of displacement and being forced to move. Here's a map. The yellow highlighted part is Alexander Street and Jacob's Well, or we are, where are we, Chris? You are here. And Jacob's Well is right there. Oh, thank you. And my friend Jobin is the executive director of Jacob's Well, and yeah, continues the legacy today. The thing that has been stirring in me preparing for this sermon, because how do you give a talk on the Downtown East Side, is this quote by Randy Woodley. Place is primarily a relational concept. And this is a simple idea that I want us to get today. And whether you live in the neighborhood, work in the neighborhood, commute from outside of it, wherever you are in your relationship to the Downtown East Side, let's think about this. Place is primarily a relational concept. This is our fourth week in the series on place, and we're making a shift now from a more theological framework to a very specific focus on certain places. Next week, we'll have the privilege of having a few guests from the board of directors from this place, the Japanese Hall, and Aaron will be conducting an interview, and that will be very helpful, very good. And today, we're focusing on the Downtown East Side. Getting more tangible, getting more people-centric as we dig into local stories, traditions, and people. If you are just joining us and you're like, oh, a sermon series on place, what does that mean? Very simply, we're talking about places we live and work in. And we also collectively have had questions about our existence in this neighborhood and what that means. And our identity in the broader city and the broader church. Aaron and Tim, thank you, did a great job of framing this whole idea in Genesis 1 and 2. If you weren't here for that, I recommend going online and checking out those first two sermons, especially Genesis 1 and 2, talking about what do we celebrate about places that we inhabit? What do we grieve? What do we have to steward? And how do we share these places? And then looking at this framework of the arc, the narrative arc of Scripture being rooted in creation, into being, and being uprooted, scattered in exile, then hopefully to being rerooted toward new creation. And the hope is that by placing ourselves in this story, our discussions can be more rootly, deeply rooted in our faith. So given that we are a church from many different neighborhoods, most of us, I think, commuted to church, how do we approach the topic of place when it comes to the Downtown East Side? And I just want you to turn to a neighbor and talk about, for 2 minutes, answering this question. What is your relationship to the Downtown East Side? Go. And someone else share, 1 minute left. Okay, let's wrap it up. Okay. I'm curious, just a kind of a crowd survey. By show of hands, who lives here in the neighborhood? By show of hands, who works here in the neighborhood? By show of hands, who here commutes from outside of the neighborhood to the Japanese Hall on Sundays? Yeah. And this is part of our reality as a church that meets in the downtown east side. How can we be good neighbors and not just perpetuate some of the things that cause displacement to our friends in the neighborhood? And so I want to do this, and I assure you, with the adequate amount of fear and trepidation. I wasn't excited about this sermon, like, oh, I can't wait. First of all, I don't know a lot. I'm looking around the room. I see many people that have much more experience and knowledge of the neighborhood, and in some ways feel very unqualified to give this sermon. But I also feel peace and hope that I don't have to say everything and that this is a start of some good conversations. So I want to frame a bit of this talk in scripture, and going back to Genesis 1 and 2, I was surprised to learn that this week, you know, I'm familiar with Genesis 1 and 2. Maybe you are too, the creation narrative of God creating and then saying it is good. So there's this emphasis of goodness of creation. Yeah, I knew that. I heard that. But what I didn't consider, and as I read more about some scholars and theologians thinking about the passage, that there's a belief that Genesis 1 and 2 was created, and I don't think written, but created, like orally, while Israel was in exile, which is interesting. It's sort of like the Life is Beautiful of Christian texts. And how many of you have seen that movie? Italian movie about a dad. I actually haven't seen it, but I... And this is maybe a good metaphor for this whole sermon. The Life is Beautiful, from what I understand from the previews and from his Oscars acceptance speech, was that it's about a dad trying to shield his kid from the realities of the Holocaust. And while Genesis 1 and 2 isn't like a shielding or protecting, there's that sense of trying to communicate hope and goodness in utterly despairing times. Exile, being pushed out of your home, wandering, starving, being angry and hateful toward God. So think about that, and maybe a bit of a challenge this week to read Genesis 1 and 2 with that perspective. Here's a theologian that says it much better than me. Two slides. When we locate the setting of Genesis 1 in history, most scholars point to the time of exile, when darkness and chaos and another set of waters, the Tigris and Euphrates, had once again captured Israel's life and hope and forward progress. If you were an Israelite exile in Babylon, torn away from the order of temple and land and worship that had ordered your universe, One of the only places to turn for hope was the created order of sunrise and sunset, days and years, fish and fowl, and great sea monsters that together pointed towards some order, some goodness that even foreign captivity could not erase or subdue. In exile is also where the words Carrie read today came in, Jeremiah 29, to seek the peace and prosperity of the city where you are exiled. Pray to the Lord for that place, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. I think this is extremely vital to our anthropologic imagination. And yes, I'm surprised as you that I've said that without stumbling. Anthropologic imagination, or AKA what we think about humans and humanity. In Genesis 1 and 2, in this context of exile, disorientation, God is saying creation is good and that humans are good and made in the image of God. There's this one little tiny line in the middle of chapter 1 that is the basis for this vision. Verse 26a. Then God said, "Let us make humanity in our image to resemble us." First of all, the fact that God refers to themselves as us is pretty cool. Typically, this text has been read on Trinity Sunday, referring to the community of God. The Message translation says, "Let us make human beings in our image, make them reflecting our nature." Another way to say it maybe is, humanity is the visible, physical representation of God. And some of you are thinking, oh, great. Yeah, thanks for that. That's awesome. Yeah, well, it's complicated, right? Is it shalom? Is humanity currently experiencing universal flourishing, wholeness, and delight? No. Shalom has been, and we all know this from experience, and if you just read the news, that shalom has been vandalized to reflect other images and not the image of Creator. But shalom is still possible. Shalom is still the hope. Shalom is still what we work toward. I think I need an amen there, because this is dark stuff. I think, too, this is why maybe our African brothers and sisters have an easier time understanding this idea of, I think it's called Ubuntu. And it's the idea that I am because you are. The community concept is not as hard to understand for some people that are not entrenched in Western ideas of individualism. And I love this. I'm going to attribute it to Jody Sparger. I know other people have said it, but I have only heard her say it. That shalom is when nothing is broken and no one is missing. So as God's image bearers, we are given a responsibility to care for the created order, including other image bearers. Ubuntu. Or as another theologian says, being image bearers of God is at the heart of how we see other humans, which results in treating them with dignity, regardless of race, age, gender, social, or economic status. So important, I think, in the Downtown East Side, seeing people rather than issues. A person is not homelessness. A person is not the opioid crisis. Each person is to be respected and honored as an image bearer of Creator God. And it's easy to go down the road of grief, but I'm making a homiletical decision here to go on the path of joy and celebration, because there's so much to celebrate in this neighborhood. First, and maybe another helpful framework. And I just got to shout out my celebrity crush, Anne Lamott. And I just realized in this sermon that I may have a thing for old white women. She, in her most recent book, sorry, Robin. That's an awkward thing to confess for the first time in public. No, it's fine. It's under control. Just don't laugh so hard. Anne Lamott tells the story of a young girl who's afraid of the dark. And she calls her mother to comfort her. And her mother comes and comforts her. And the next night, she's afraid of the dark. Her mom comes to comfort her. Finally, kind of out of frustration, but out of care, she says, "Jesus will be with you. It's okay." And when the lights turned off, the girl said, "I need someone with skin on." Yeah, right? We need someone with skin on. And she says so beautifully. This is the main instruction that I would leave my family in my swag bag of spiritual truth. Be goodness with skin on. Artisan Church, be goodness with skin on. Or John 1:14 in the Message, the word became flesh and blood, skin, and moved into the neighborhood. There's lots to celebrate. For instance, this place that we're in, the Japanese Hall, the beautiful people that have been so hospitable to us. And we're going to hear more about the challenges and the joys of that journey and celebrate the Japanese Hall and Japanese heritage next week. Jacob's Well, like I mentioned. Love you, Jobin. Love Jacob's Well. This is Jobin and Jay up front of Jacob's Well. Yes, sir. Jim Green, if we go back to our map, Jim Green is right next door. Are you familiar with it, Randy? A little bit, yeah. Right next door to us, and here's a photo of Sandu. He's one of the front desk workers. Amazing staff, just great people, salt of the earth. Goodness with skin on. The dugout, how many of you are familiar with the dugout? It's just a bit of a way down Alexander Street. And this is my good friend Terry in front of the dugout. He's recently started working for Dugout. It's a drop-in center, and they have teams of volunteers that give meals every day. I wanted to pause here on Terry because he gave me some great quotes for the sermon. He told me to tell them to you. So he said, "The most important part of the New Testament is when Jesus says, 'Love your neighbor.'" Agreed. His advice, and which I'm sharing with permission, says we need more empathy, understanding, and respect for where people are at. And then finally, he said, "Treat people like human beings, not addicts or homeless." Agreed. Thank you, Terry. Crab Park, which is a little bit further there. Fiona York, an advocate for the residents of Crab Park, just goodness with skin on. Our neighbors across the street, Stephen, Joanna, and Andrew, salt of the earth people as well. And Stephen started something called FIMBY, kind of a response to NIMBY, not in my backyard. FIMBY is family in my backyard. And you can check it out, FIMBY.ca. You can scan this QR code. But I'll offer what he said about it. In today's world, he says, where social media often dominates our interactions, FIMBY emerges as a beacon of meaningful connection. Unlike many digital platforms that use algorithms to hook us with constant content promoting echo chambers, FIMBY enriches our lives with real-world interactions. It offers a practical approach to share, lend, and support one another, actively combating consumerism and environmental neglect. Promoting spiritual growth, building local connections, combat consumerism and bias, foster a we, not me culture, democratize access. These are just a few things of the goodness in this neighborhood. There's so much more we could probably share for a while, especially those who live and work in the neighborhood. Evelyn Salar Center across the street, First United Shelter right next door to us. And this is hopeful for me too, is the Downtown Eastside Pastors Prayer Meetings. This is Don, Andrew, and Tim. And it was just the four of us this week, but it's a monthly rhythm that we keep. We pray for each other and we pray for our neighborhood. Often it looks like this, next picture. A lot of great folk, goodness with skin on. All this to me confirms what Randy Woodley says, place is primarily a relational concept. And with that in mind, I don't want this to be just a single person giving a sermon. I want to invite my friends Jobin and Adria to come and join me right now. And would love, they're going to help share some things about what they're celebrating, what they're grieving, and then also if you were at the last sermon with Sage Kosa talking about being naturalized versus invasive species. So in the next 10 minutes, that's where we're going to go, and then we'll come to the table. But first, who are you? And tell us a bit about yourself.
Hello, I am Adria. And I think, as you see, my job, I work at UGM, which many people are familiar with. I'm originally from Manitoba, and I came out here by choice. But in my experience of being here, I felt very displaced. It's a very different world here compared to Prairieville, for those of you who know. So it's smaller towns, you kind of do life together. So even this idea of like commuting church, I was like, what is this? So what I found eventually a good connection to a church, but my Monday to Friday, I just felt very alone and displaced. And as a result, I was kind of like searching for like, how do I fill this gap when my heart longs for something more? And so I had a friend that lived in the neighborhood, and she's like, yeah, I have like an intentional Christian community house. Have you ever thought of living in one of those? And I was like, this is sounding good. I moved into the neighborhood probably about 9 years ago. And what I found was I was quite uncomfortable in some sense. I didn't know how to be. I didn't know how to naturally, like, it may not seem like it to those who know me here, but like, I am actually a shy person. I just cover it up with like extroversion. I was like, how can I be a good neighbor to my neighbors that are very different from me? The desire was there. But I also needed a job. So I started looking at different organizations, and I did choose like a mega organization of in the neighborhood. But I felt like as I read about UGM, one of their core values was relationship. And I was like, okay, I can do that, and I want to do that. And so I started working there to learn to watch others kind of build relationship. And I've kind of been here ever since. Anything else you want to know about me? Jobin.
Thanks, Adria. I'm Jobin. I don't know why my name has come up so often today already, so I don't need to say any more about my name, but I'm a third culture kid. I think I've had a lifelong search for place that continues. There have been times in my life I haven't had choice about places I've been, and I call my 4 years ago I moved to Canada, I call it my selfish move. I came for the mountains and the trees and hope to stay for the people. But I'm a classic immigrant, you know, the invasive species of people's imagination. When you think, who's coming? Well, it's me. So, but on this process of trying to find peace and belonging and being a good neighbor while doing it, my first day in Vancouver, someone drove me to the Downtown East Side and said, avoid this place. I have worked in nonprofits for a long time, and I said, definitely don't want to work in a nonprofit again. But I found myself in February of 2020, meeting Lance, my friend Lance, that welcomed me to Downtown Eastside, looking at being at Jacob's Well. And so I found myself at Jacob's Well, and then 3 weeks later, a giant pandemic came along. And so there I was in a community of welcome, weirdly looking for a place, searching for home, and coming to the exact neighborhood that is very, very good at those things. A neighborhood that is full of homelessness is much better at welcoming you home than places I've been before. And so I have the privilege of living and working and sharing friendship with people who are 2 minutes from me. And I tell my team at Jacob's Well often, this doesn't happen twice in your life, that some of your closest friends are just outside your door, down the street, and work is a walk away. And so I'm grateful for that. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah, as you were talking to, I was thinking of how we ended up here. I'm blaming Peter LeGrand, because I think you found the connection to the Japanese Hall. Peter was a pastor in this community. And then I'm seeing you, Peter, and I'm seeing Ronnie, you next to Peter. Like, so much experience and lived life in this neighborhood. You guys should be up here too, but just want to shout out and thank you for all you guys do. Okay, next question, and maybe you can think about your own experience too, is what is one thing you're celebrating about this neighborhood?
I think for me, in having that experience of displacement, it is a very friendly place. And I think initially I confused discomfort with danger. And it's not to, dismiss the fact that it could be dangerous here. But I confuse that with discomfort. And what I have found is very warm hearts. People talk to me all the time, see me, whether I know them or not. One of the stories is super random, but I am shy, so I have a hard time getting to know neighbors and stuff. And so one of my neighbors invited me over to their place because she was doing she hadn't done music for a long time. She's like, "Will you come to my concert?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll come. And I didn't really know what I was getting into. So I show up, and of course I'm a person that's a few minutes early, which probably was, maybe don't do that. So it was even more awkward. And so in the end, I'm sitting around these people that are bashing Christians, which was, I kind of enjoyed. Not because I was bashing, but just it was just so different. And there was this woman that was a Satanist and all of these things. And I was just like, what is going on here? And then finally we went to her show, which had a horrible sound system. And music, I mean, I was glad to have earplugs and stuff. She offered them to us, and just seeing all of these people celebrate this big thing in her life, of coming back to something she once loved. And I'm just in awe and wonder, this is a bizarre experience. They welcome me in, and I just sense God's love in them and around them. And that was a beautiful thing.
This is similar to what you said, Adria, but I think it's the constancy of welcome. This neighborhood is quite often treated as a petri dish of experimentation. So there's always people coming in and out, charities coming in and out, and friends in the neighborhood coming in and out. But it's an incredible ability. It's really a gift to be able to consistently welcome new people in. Again and again and again, even when it causes hurt. I don't think I have the strength to do that in my own life. I cut people off who hurt me. This neighborhood has an incredible resilience to letting people in. And that ecosystem allows for us to really learn what that's like in this neighborhood, but also in our own neighborhoods, wherever we live. The posture that the Downtown Eastside has might be the posture we all need.
What's something you're grieving?
I think for me, the stigma that's around this neighborhood, because I think stigma disconnects. and you don't get to actually see the beauty that's here. And I speak of that stigma, and like, it's within myself as well. And so I notice it around me, and I notice it within me. And just like, yeah, it grieves me that people aren't treated like people, so.
At Jacob's Well, we are almost flowery in our admiration for the neighborhood. We think it's a very beautiful place with beautiful people, but there's a lot of sad things too. And I could list many, but the thing that saddens me the most is the way that we often see this neighborhood as a list of needs rather than people looking to belong.
Well said. And then finally, again, friends, we're not trying to talk about everything or solve anything here. We're just opening up a dialogue and hopefully celebrating some things about the neighborhood. And then also I'll present some opportunities for us moving forward. But I want to end with this question. How can we be more naturalized to this neighborhood and less of an invasive species? This is a really big question. Maybe Joe, when you start, and do you want to kind of unpack what you think that means to you? And then, good luck.
Thanks, Scott. It's a bit of a story, bear with me here. When I was a junior in university, I decided to take the summer and hike the Fife Trail in Scotland. And if you've ever been to Scotland, it's this coastal trail, and there's these yellow flowers, a sea of yellow flowers everywhere. And it was, every day was a pleasant sight of one of my favorite flowers. And so I started reading about it. It's a flower called whin. It tastes like coconuts and is very invasive. But I can't imagine Scotland without that flower. The sheep eat it. People have poems about them, but there's invasive species. And so I said, well, Jobin, you're an invasive species too, just like this flower. And so I got a tattoo of the flower on my arm, much to my botanist friend's chagrin, why do you have an invasive flower on your arm? But in thinking about this idea of invasiveness versus naturalization, last December I was back in Scotland and helping a friend clear a birch forest. That's a long story, but we had to go through a bramble bush of whin. Whin is a weed. I didn't realize how thorny it was. And after the third or fourth prick of on my arm, I was wondering, I didn't need a tattoo. I could just walk through this flower and felt the same pain. And maybe it's not the pleasant thing that I imagined. And that got me thinking, it's very easy to talk about naturalization or look at this perfect plant that comes in and assimilates with everyone else or causes beauty everywhere it goes. And in my thought process of being a person is invasive, and I will challenge us all, we're all invasive. Even if I fit the imagination, we're all the same. And my hope is that I'll bring beauty, but I also realized there's some pain in it. And I want to challenge us that this process, whatever this looks like for us personally, whatever it looks like for us as a community, as a church, there'll be some pain, there's some adjustment. The wonderful thing about it is that for an invasive plant to be naturalized, it requires a certain context of the land it goes to. And the Downtown Eastside is a beautiful place. It's a place of welcome, it's a place where if you want to be creative, there are 1,000 people out there that want to be creative with you. If you want to welcome people to a meal, there are hundreds of people who will join you in that meal. If you have any availability, 10 people will line up to have coffee with you. So there's a lot of room to turn ourselves into naturalized members of this community. The other thing I realized is that the Bible is full of stories of displaced people or people that God is moving from place to place. We're in Genesis 1 and 2. Not too far down the road, God calls this guy called Abraham and says, pick up your family and move. And in the sense of place, maybe being people of faith is our working out of what that means. I think we will always move, we will always be pulled left and right, and we will always be looking for some place to belong. And maybe the journey of finding place, maybe the journey of seeing where we belong, maybe the journey of joining those who have been there before, working the work that we do while we're here, and when we go, and the people who come after us, making it possible for people to all flourish before, during, and after, in whatever that beauty looks like, is what we're called to. And it is, that is the journey of our faith. So this is not so much a story of the Downtown Eastside, as it is also a story of us, where we've been, where we are, and where we will go.
I don't think I need to add anything. That was awesome. I think what I'll speak from is kind of more my personal journey. And I wouldn't have named it naturalization until I guess I heard that recently. But I think it's been very much a movement for me of like resistance and being willing to be inconvenienced to being open to something other. I think when I first moved here, what was kind of prompting me, or like not prompting, but like kind of pressuring me, was this evangelistic notion of like, I must tell people the gospel, or that if I'm not a, if I'm not doing well as a Christian, if I'm doing that. But that never felt right. And so I kind of took a break from that forever. But I think it was realizing, wait a minute, like I can come here with this agenda, or I can just be. I could just be here wherever I am, like here or another neighborhood that you live in, and I can pause and say, God, you're already here. You're already working. What are you doing in these people? And so it's very much about changing a posture. I think sitting with the discrepancy between what I think my values are, the discrepancy between that and how I am actually being in a place, I think sitting with that in a non-judgmental way has been really helpful for me. And it's changed my posture to be open, curious, and a desire to learn, and learning to value people close up. And within that, I see the beauty. Like, I'm a person that I guard my time for a variety of reasons, including recovering from burnout. And so I'm very resistant to being in an inconvenient situation. And I think this season that I'm finding in, because I think this has been a kind of more of a solo journey, but now I feel like I have people that are walking in similar directions, so it's a communal journey as well, and that's been helping me. I don't know where it's going, but I'm sure that was good enough.
So much wisdom that you guys have shared with us. Thank you. And I want to encourage everyone else, if there's probably more questions or things that are coming up, to track down these two and continue the conversation. Or, hey, what do you mean by this? You can follow up with them. Also, I want to draw our attention to a few opportunities coming up. While I do that, I want to invite the band to come up. We're going to sing. Thank you very much. Blessings. Again, just trying to start more dialogue about this. Next week, I mentioned the Japanese Hall and Language School interview that's happening. We're going to do a workshop, How to Be Good Neighbors, end of June, with a panel of guests from the Downtown Eastside. This is, because we're largely a commuter church, this is for people who come from outside the neighborhood to church primarily on Sundays. If you're interested in this, this is going to be helpful to kind of go into detail in some of those things that Jobin and Adria were talking about. And then finally, the displacement walking tour that Colin's hosting. Colin has done a ton of research and thinking and planning of this walking tour, so I think it'll be really fruitful. There are limited spots. There's only 12 spots. But it'll be an afternoon thing on a Sunday, 12:30 to 3:30. So 3 hours, lunch is part of that. And I think I'll leave it there.